This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us on this rainy Saturday at News Radio 830 WCCO. Tom Schroyer is in. We've got a program literally ripped from the headlines. We will deal with antitrust law in the age of health care reform. Tom Sharon joining us in the studio. Tom, we've had such a great run of weather this spring. We're not used to these rainy days.
I know, but I tell you what, I will take this because it's been so bone dry. It's really kind of fun to see.
Yeah, no doubt. My lawn certainly needed it, and I know lawns and parks all over the area certainly needed that as well. Tom, we've got a great program lined up today, as always, and as I pointed out, a topic literally ripped from the headlines.
Absolutely right. In fact, it couldn't be more timely. Even this week, we're hearing about cost projections for the new health care reform legislation that just passed, and a lot of debate about which direction the costs are going and how to address them still. And, of course, a lot of this intersects with the way we've set up our healthcare industry, which is a very odd amalgamation of wanting competition and wanting steep and heavy regulation. Tom, Sharon is well qualified to address the intersection of antitrust law and these healthcare cost issues because Tom is has practiced in the antitrust law area for more than 30 years. He's a past chairman of the Minnesota State Bar Association's antitrust section of law, and he's a professor of antitrust law at Hamline Law School, Law University, I should say, and also is on the faculty at the St. Thomas undergraduate program for computer engineering. And Tom, do you get into antitrust issues with the computer engineers?
Yeah, there's a lot of action in that area, as a matter of fact. I expect everybody... The poster child for enforcement was the U.S. government's case against Microsoft a few years ago, so we have to deal with that issue.
So, Thomas, welcome to the show again. I know you've been on before, and we've talked about antitrust, the history and its application in a variety of different topics, and the new, at that time anyway, new Obama administration's initiatives around antitrust. Those have continued in some measure involving the delivery of health care in this country, haven't they?
Well, yes, they have. Although, as you said, in the healthcare area, it's a complicated mix of regulations, and the clear lines, the clear role that competition is supposed to play tends to get blurred. But clearly, the Obama administration enforcement agencies, that's the Justice Department Antitrust Section and the Federal Trade Commission, they have new heads, and they are taking a close look at the competition in the healthcare industry.
Now, on the one hand, we have the antitrust laws, which are based on the common sense notion that competition is good for consumers because if there's competition in the marketplace, consumers will have more goods or better quality at lower prices. But competition can, by definition, also be ruthless, cutthroat, and that's antithetical, I would gather, or I think anyway, to the delivery of healthcare.
Well, you know, in light of your introductory remark, it's important to realize that we think in this country, or we like to think, we have a market-based system of health care. But in many cases, people are reluctant to recognize that an essential element of free markets is competition. And without it, you can't have a really effective market system. Now, competition is problematical because it produces winners and losers, and that can be described as ruthless in some situations, but is generally considered good. Most economists agree that that kind of competition encourages, inspires performance and betterment, and in healthcare, like everywhere else, that redounds to the benefit of consumers.
Well, but I can only look down the road. If we had unbridled price competition in the healthcare industry, would we be looking at a situation like we face with the airlines today, where they used to be regulated and everybody got a three-course meal, no matter what, whether they bought first class or tourist? When I first started practicing law, anyway, and now you're being asked, in some cases, just a couple of weeks ago, to pay to bring an extra bag onto or into into the cabin to fly with you. And can we could we look forward to a situation where hospitals would be charging for, you know, linens and bedding for people to come in and stay?
Well, I'm not sure that we'll make that transition, but I think it's important to note that deregulation of the airline industry has generally resulted in its consumer benefits in terms of reduced prices. We're seeing this sort of complicated system of pricing that they're using to try to squeeze every penny out of the flying public. But that may be more of a public relations problem than a true economic or antitrust issue. Airline industries are not exempt from the antitrust laws, and they have been tested in a number of cases, even in local markets here, and the competition has been good for consumers.
Sure, but I suppose almost by definition, whenever you're setting somebody up to deliver a regulated service, whether it's practicing law or dentistry or medicine, you're going to have a situation where putting quality of health care first is going to lead to some anti-competitive behavior.
Well, that's certainly the case. There's, as you mentioned, a rash of other types of regulations, in particular what are called health and safety regulations of all kinds. Virtually anybody who provides medical services must be licensed. That includes a physician, nurse practitioner, physician's assistant, pharmacist. Those regulations, though, are public health and safety regulations, not antitrust matter. They take into consideration consumer safety rather than economic competition. Those regulations are good to the extent that they protect health and safety. They only become a problem from an antitrust standpoint if they are pretextual and cover anti-competitive or go beyond what's needed to ensure health and safety. Everybody can agree we don't want an untrained individual opening your skull doing brain surgery, but do we absolutely have to have a fully licensed doctor, a physician, prescribing cough medicine to kids with or pills for ear infections? That's the kind of question on the border of useful public health and safety regulation and requirements that may go beyond. And reduce competition unnecessarily.
All right, we have much more coming up on the program today. Antitrust law in the age of healthcare reform. Tom Schroyer is our host. Our guest today is Tom Sharon. By the way, if you have a question about today's topic, feel free to call the program 651-989-9226. Toll free 1-866-989-9226. You can text the studio as well at any time. The text line 81807. That's 81807. It is 1217. Much more coming up. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know the shareholders of Moss & Barnett elected attorney Ann Newhall as president of the firm back in 1999, making it one of the very first firms to be led by a woman?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss & Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO. News Radio 830 WCCO, streaming online right now at WCCORadio.com.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. Tom Schroyer, our host, Tom Sharon in the studio. Antitrust law in the age of healthcare reform, and more on that important topic in a moment. But Tom, our always popular question of the week.
Exactly right, Steve. And this time we're going to ask a question that doesn't have a true or false yes or no answer.
Uh-oh. That's I'm out of luck. Jim's out of luck as well.
I think we're going to need to have people text their answers in, although I know they can call as well. But here's the question of the week, and I think it's apropos, especially to our topic today. Who said the world of antitrust is reminiscent of Alice's Wonderland? Everything seemingly is, yet apparently isn't, simultaneously. Do you know that answer, Tom Sharon?
I don't know the source of that, no.
All right, well, I'll keep you on needles and pins here for the next 40 minutes as well. How about that?
Yeah. I've got a guess.
All right.
I've got a guess.
All right.
I'll say it was John D. Rockefeller.
I think you're in the right mold, but wrong century.
Okay.
All right.
Because I do know this, that was a big antitrust deal once upon a time.
Exactly right. I think he was a little angrier than whimsical about it, however. All right. We're going to return to talking about antitrust law and the intersection between that doctrine of law and health care, where many observers, Tom, Sharon, believe that if we restored a little bit of more competition to the marketplace, we might have lower costs. But we find that that's challenged by the need for maintaining health and safety issues. And also, I think we might comment, would you agree that the federal government in its role as the biggest purchaser of health care through Medicare and Medicaid also has a significant self-interest here in keeping antitrust law at bay?
Well, I don't know that the government needs to worry about competition, but it does distort it. The presence of so much federal money and funding in the market does tend to distort the market. On that same time, there isn't any reason why competition can't benefit the government as well. After all, the government is just us, and we're the taxpayer.
Sure. Now, one of the areas that does pop up over the years on a consistent basis is that doctors complain that the health insurance companies, medical insurers, especially those operating managed care programs or HMOs, dictate their pricing. What's going on there, Tom?
Well, the insurance companies are both the health care providers groups. What they're actually asking is that they be given the authority to group together and set prices.
The doctors are.
Doctors, right. The American Medical Association has frequently asked for that authority. It hasn't happened, and it is not likely to happen because it's really been opposed by the government under both Republican and Democratic administrations. There's nothing like that in the Health Care Reform Act. The fact is that doctors are at least potentially competitors, and they're independent businessmen, and in most instances are potentially competitors of one another. There's a labor exemption for employees binding together to engage in collective bargaining, but doctors are not qualified as employees, at least not in most instances. And that given the fact that they are not, when competitors or potential competitors get together and fix prices, that's per se illegal under Section 1 of the Sherman Antitrust Act.
I assume that would apply to other professionals like lawyers and dentists, accountants, whatnot.
Well, there's some people that feel that yes, it does definitely apply to them all. There are some people that feel that professionals as a group should be and physicians in particular should be treated differently under the antitrust laws. There was one Supreme Court case here recently called the California Dental case, which gave some support for that. In that case, the court allowed a professional group representing dentists to prescribe competitive price advertising. The problem with that case is that the court converted what was basically a First Amendment issue about restricting advertising speech into an antitrust case and did it without really giving full consideration to the anti-competitive effects of what was coming down. It should be narrowly read to its circumstances where the FTC had proof, apparently, that these ads were helped consumers and didn't reduce quality of care or safety.
What was in the ads? What was in the ads, Tom?
Price competition.
Oh, I see. They were actually posting prices that so people could shop between different doctors?
Well, the rule prohibited them from doing it.
I see.
That rule implemented through a trade association, which is really nothing but a group, an agreement between its members, constitutes a contract or a conspiracy and restraint of trade under Chairman 1.
We've got about a minute here before the break, Tom. Have the antitrust laws ever been used to challenge the medical profession with antitrust violations in terms of their pricing of med services?
Yeah, they have. In many cases, there have been government and private suits, primarily government action in this area, challenging, and by the Federal Trade Commission, challenging physician groups that bind together improperly to try to restrict pricing, try to basically refuse to deal with insurance groups unless they provide the reimbursement rates that they agree to as a group. That's price fixing, and it's been challenged and held to be illegal. Also, the American Medical Association, in a case that was kind of the flip side of the California dental case, was restricting price advertising for doctors, and that was held to be illegal.
All right, we have more on the way. Antitrust law in the age of healthcare reform. Tom Schroyer is our host. Tom Sharon is our guest on the program. By the way, you can text the studio at 81807. That's 81807. Or call the program at 651-989-9226. Toll free 1-866-989-9226. It is Minnesota Law each and every Saturday at noon. Here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett each and every Saturday at noon today. Antitrust law in the age of healthcare reform. Tom Schroyer is our host. Tom Sharon joining us in studio. You're invited to call the program at 651-989-9226 or toll-free 1-866-989-9226. You can text our studio anytime as well at 81807. That's 81807. And we've been talking a lot about price competition and how it's sometimes very difficult to get a handle on what the price is for a service or a procedure. Most of us probably don't care if we have insurance, but there is a new avenue for people to receive basic health care, and there are these clinics, if you will, in retail locations, minute clinics, etc., and they clearly say, well, here's what it is for some sort of physical exam or a strep throat test, etc. This could have a significant impact on the marketplace. There is price competition, it seems, in that area.
Well, you know, Steve, that's an interesting topic you bring up there, because we're facing in this country a pending shortage of primary care physicians. This has been recognized by the Association of Medical Colleges, something like 45,000 short by 2020. And in the whole area of primary care, the new expansion of healthcare is going to create demand that it may overwhelm the supply. So we need to be thinking about some new models of delivery, and there are encouragements in the new Health Reform Act to do that. But it's also it's interesting that the Minute Clinic in particular, or its original form, originated here in Minnesota. And Minnesota is now the leading state, has more Minute Clinics in place than any other state. We have, they have not only, listed price, but they are open all the time. No appointment. You get in right away. These are basically the fast-moving parts of the healthcare business. And they are repetitious, uncomplicated proceedings or diagnoses. The facilities are staffed by graduate nurse practitioners or physician's assistants under the supervision of a doctor. And it is one model that might offer some relief and competition in the marketplace. Now, it also gets us into this issue of how much regulation there should be in terms of licensing these clinics, defining the scope of their practice. Some medical groups, such as the Association of Pediatricians and the Association of Family Practice Physicians, have expressed some concerns and asked for more regulation in this area. But you always have to ask when you talk about regulation, particularly when it comes from a competitor, to what extent is that really needed for health and safety purposes, and to what extent is it simply going to restrict competition?
You know, it reminds me, Tom, a bit about what's happening in the legal profession, which is the trend toward, just emerging trend, I might add, toward what's called unbundling of legal services, where individuals will pick and choose from a menu in terms of what legal services they want to buy for a particular particular event. Say, for example, you're getting divorced, you might hire a lawyer for an initial consultation to help you draft the initial documentation and then handle the rest of the divorce yourself. Or perhaps you'd ask a lawyer to help you out just for one procedure during a lawsuit. And perhaps we see this by analogy with the medical profession, with these unbundling, if you were, of these minute clinics under the supervision, but I must say indirect supervision at best, of a physician as people go into the clinic and they get these procedures, which basically they're self-diagnosing that they need and can use.
Yeah. Well, it's comparable. I think there will be the definition of the practice of law, which is reserved by law to the to lawyers, is similar to the definition of the practice of medicine reserved by law to licensed physicians. And that's going to be an issue, competitive issue, in every profession, and it is in this case as well. But, you know, one other thing here is the competition that we're looking at from these facilities is going to match a need with a service and a new delivery system. So we need to stay flexible as we go forward, recognizing that we're going to have geriatric care needs for an aging population. And I saw recently that these facilities, at least in Minnesota, are going to get into monitoring chronic disease conditions, which plague the elderly, diabetes, for example. And that would be a great relief in terms of cost on the system if that could be accomplished.
Now, Tom, in terms of this physician shortage, which you mentioned, and I saw an even higher number in the paper here just a week or so ago, 150,000 over the next generation, too few doctors to treat an aging population. I'm wondering, is there any talk about the medical schools possibly being required and maybe using antitrust law to require them to extend their admissions and admit more folks so that we can cure this and overcome this looming shortage?
Well, there are those who claim that the medical profession, through the accreditation process, has gained control over medical admissions and that they therefore control entry into the profession. The medical association would be responsible. They're not exempt from the antitrust laws. They are responsible for the actions. But to my knowledge, that particular thing has been looked at and analyzed, maybe challenged by individuals, but I'm not aware of any case that has found that to be an antitrust violation.
Is the marketplace at work, though, because there is a shortage of primary care physicians because there's more money and more specialized fields that I love my particular primary care doctor, but every now and then he'll lament, boy, if I would have gone into a more specific medical field, I could be making more money, but I love the primary care role. That's the nature of the marketplace right now.
Well, that's true, Steve, and that some will go into those specialties by being drawn by pay incentives.
Sure.
But there's still plenty of money left in practicing family law and pediatrics. And the fact is that many qualified applicants are turned away from admission to medical school. And more critical, I understand, is the bottleneck in residencies, which are very expensive. And even the foreign-educated doctors who might step in here and fill the gap have to go through these residency programs, so they have the same bottleneck. The federal government has funded these residencies to the tune of, like, I think, $900 million. I may be way off on that figure. And there was an effort to get additional funding in the Health Care Reform Act to expand those education facilities and be more creative. The expansion funds were not included, however.
I might note, Tom, that in 2004, Congress passed and the president signed a law that granted antitrust law exemption to graduate medical students who are participating in these residency matching programs where the doctors, the young students coming out of med school are matched to a particular specialty, and they get a specific exemption to the antitrust law to allow them to do that matching. So it really comes back to the point where our theme we've been talking about here, which is that we really kind of want to have our cake and eat it too when it comes to healthcare. That is to say, we like the idea of having the highest quality and safest, and yet at the same time we want to lower the price, and so we have in some measure hamstrung the antitrust laws.
Well, and that would be the case here, but that arguably cooperation is going to produce a benefit that exceeds the detriment of reducing competition. That's always going to be a balancing act.
Quite right. And, of course, we haven't even started to talk about hospitals and healthcare facilities and how antitrust law comes to apply to them. And I understand this is an area where antitrust law has really been quite active.
This is in the
in the area of hospitals and healthcare facilities.
Healthcare. And right,
I know we had a lot of concentration of healthcare facilities back in the 80s and the 90s as we allowed these hospitals to, in effect, combine together to shrink the capacity.
Yeah, there was a plethora of mergers back in the growth back in the 80s and excessive bed capacity that had to get bleeded out of the system, and there were a number of mergers that had that purpose in mind. And they were perhaps arguably pro-competitive. By the end, they also, this in the 90s, when these mergers were taking place, it also coincided with the growth of health care management or health maintenance organizations, which the doctors don't like. Physicians, preferred provider organizations, and HMOs reduce reimbursement rates by threatening to direct their customers to other providers. And as the concentration becomes increased in the hospital and health facility market, the health insurers are unable to exercise that kind of control on pricing. And by the end of the 90s, the FTC had become pretty concerned about the potential anti-competitive effects, in specifically the market power that would be created by these mergers. And they began to challenge these mergers, but without much success. There was one point around 2003 where the FTC, as I recall, had gone 1-7 in their attempts to challenge these hospital mergers in court. I'm not sure I have a good explanation for that or whether that's really got that much to do with the antitrust laws.
Are you seeing that the judges are applying perhaps different standards in hospital merger cases, or are they just looking at them with different filters on their lenses and applying the same standards?
Well, I think in the case of this is my own take, and I don't know that everyone would agree, but the nonprofit hospital in the community tends to be considered a good corporate citizen, and judges have that same general attitude. So when the government goes in to challenge what they're doing, they sort of get hometowned, as we lawyers say, with the judge being partial to the local nonprofit hospitals and thinking they just can't do any wrong. There was an example in the Butterfield case where the court specifically referred to the, quote, white hat role played by the hospital in terms of justifying the merger. A couple of other factors were that the insurance companies weren't necessarily on the side of the government when they got in that. Well, you'd think they would be because they would benefit from these reduced reimbursement rates, but not necessarily if they can simply pass the costs through to their customers.
We have more on the way. It is Tom Schroyer with Tom Sharon, Antitrust Law in the Age of Healthcare Reform. We have much more on the way in a moment. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Do Did you know Moss and Barnett's attorneys help to found and remain active in the Minnesota Legal Advice Clinics and similar organizations, including the Fund for the Legal Aid Society?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO. WCCO, now available crystal clear on 102.9 WLTE HD2, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
7:30.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Antitrust law in the age of healthcare reform. Tom Schroyer, our host. Tom Sharon in studio. And before we run out of time, we better talk pharmaceuticals.
Quite right. And before we do that, let's give the answer to our question of the week, which is, who famously said, quote, "The world of antitrust is reminiscent of Alice's Wonderland. Everything seemingly is, yet apparently isn't, simultaneously." And Thomas, I don't know if you've had a guess yet.
Did I say that?
No, you didn't. The answer is that this was said by recent past chair of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, Alan Greenspan, somebody who ought to know a fair amount, I guess, about how our economy works. And speaking of that, one of the biggest sectors of health care cost and challenge these days has to do with the cost of medical devices and pharmaceuticals. And that brings us into a whole constellation of issues intersecting between antitrust law, health and safety issues, and patent law.
Yeah, that's for sure. This is a real complicated area, complicated regulatory landscape. Antitrust law is supposed to produce price competition in medication markets. Patent law is there to – most of the most expensive drugs are protected by patents, and that's necessary in order to promote innovation. But then there's also this elaborate public health and safety regulation in the form of Food and Drug Administration requirements that there be proof of safety and effectiveness before a drug can be allowed onto the market.
Tom, we only have just a few minutes left here. Let's talk about the two hot-button issues that I know you and I talked about offline getting ready for this. The first has to do with drug companies cutting deals with one another to, in effect, extend the lives of patents.
Well, yeah, the Congress has set up a streamlined system for – you know, everybody knows a way to get competition here is to get more generic drugs onto the market that will be substitutes for high-priced patent-protected drugs. Congress set up a streamlined system for approval of those drugs with the idea that any patent issues would get resolved up front if the generic can come online during the period of patent protection. The problem is that instead of getting a judgment from a court that would resolve patent issues, what the parties do is the generic drug manufacturer and the patent-protected brand manufacturer get together and settle the case out of court before the judge rules. And there's no problem with that if you get a normal kind of a settlement where the infringer, the generic, just waits or gets a license and pays the patent holder. But the problem is there's been an increase of cases where the patent holder, the branded drug manufacturer, actually pays the generic drug manufacturers to stay out of the market.
These are so-called pay-for-delay pharmaceutical settlements. And according to something I just read, they cost the country $3.5 billion a year.
Ooh. Well, that's a recent report from the Federal Trade Commission, which has had this on the front burner for some time. It's a top priority of the current chairman of the FTC to outlaw these. But the FTC has not had great success in court. After initially succeeding in challenging one of these, they've had three federal circuit courts of appeal go the wrong way for them on this. The courts look at the fact that these are settlements of disputed legal matters, and the defendants are not asking, being asked to do the and generic companies are not asking, being asked to do anything more than they would be required to do if the patent was valid, which is stay out of the market until the patent expires.
So this is a situation where the FTC, which is enforcing antitrust laws, has intervened and is being frustrated now by how the courts are applying the law.
That's really the case right now. Now, there's been a change in the Justice Department. It publicly disputed this issue with the FTC under the prior administration. But the new administration has come online now and filed amicus briefs in recent cases saying that the test should be more rigorous, that these are things should be considered to be inherently suspect, and that the drug companies should have to come forward with proof that they are, in fact, pro-competitive.
All right, there he is, Tom Sheeran, along with our host, Tom Shore, Antitrust Law in the Age of Healthcare Reform. What's next week, Tom?
We're going to take a look inside the Downtown 100, which is a project whereby the Minneapolis city attorney is targeting frequent chronic offenders in downtown Minneapolis for quick justice in an effort to make sure that downtown is safe for everyone.
That is next Saturday at noon.